If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and/or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool, so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. Welcome to the Outdoor Classrooms podcast. I'm your host, Victoria Hackett, and I'm so glad you're here. In today's episode, we're diving into the world of storytelling, film, and the power of nature to connect and inspire us. I'm joined by filmmaker and writer Juliet Grable, co-creator of the documentary In Our Nature, which beautifully captures the stories of people who are rediscovering their relationship with the natural world. Juliet shares how she and her creative partner, James Parker, developed the concept for the film, how they selected the stories featured, and what they learned along the way. We also talk about their hopes in Our Nature and what might spark curiosity, reflection, and a deeper appreciation for the world around us. And if you're interested in supporting their journey, we'll also chat about their Seed and Spark campaign and how you can get involved in helping this important project reach more people. So grab a cup of tea, step outside, if you can, and join us for an inspiring conversation about film, storytelling, and a shared magic of being in our nature. Without further ado, Juliet. Hello, everybody. We have the one and only Juliet Grable here, and she is speaking on behalf of both Juliet and James Parker. They created this incredible documentary called In Our Nature. So she's here to talk to us about it. So welcome, Juliet.
Thank you so much for having me.
Terrific. So I'd love to start out with the first question, which was basically, how did you and James come up with the concept of creating a documentary called In Our Nature?
I'm so glad you asked. James and I started talking about doing a project together about a year and a half ago, maybe a little bit longer. We had worked on another film project together a few years before. And at the time we started talking again, about a year and a half ago, all we knew is that we wanted to explore the political and cultural divide in America. And we were really interested in discovering if there were some things that could potentially bring people together, despite the fact that it seemed like we were just growing ever farther apart. So we were having these initial conversations, and around that same time, James was contacted by someone at NAAEE, which is the North American Association for Environmental Education, and he had done some work for them in the past. He'd done actually, I think, a few short films for them and had a really great working relationship. They were interested in hiring him to do another project for their upcoming conference, their annual conference in November. And the theme for that year was building bridges. So the more they talked and the more we talked, it just seemed to make sense to join forces and direct our project to that theme and to take a look at environmental education and its potential for bringing people together. And we were very, very lucky to find funding to support our project rather quickly. And off we went on a discovery process to figure out what in the heck this film was going to be about.
Huh. That's incredible. I have to say, it's an incredible documentary in terms of what I've seen thus far, just the trailers and whatnot. You've got all these incredible outdoor classroom stories that are all very, very different. How did you select the stories to go into this documentary?
Well, it was not easy. As I'm sure you're aware, there are so many incredible programs and examples of environmental education, both formal and non-formal, out there. I think we were motivated by finding examples that ticked a bunch of boxes. Of course, we wanted to find stories that really demonstrated the bridge building capacity of these programs. But we also, you know, the more we started looking into the nature connection and environmental education, the more we realized that nature really is this kind of golden key that helps with so many different things. And so we wanted to choose stories that demonstrated all of the many, many benefits of this type of experience. And I think we also wanted to find examples that maybe didn't fit neatly into the box of what people imagine when they hear the term environmental education. We kind of wanted to stretch the definition and also get people to consider what environmental education can look like. And so we talked with a number of different people from around the country. We were very fortunate to have, you know, people both at NAAEE who connected us with folks, and then used some of our own personal connections to lead to other people. So we spoke with directors at environmental centers. We spoke with people involved in the forest school movement. We talked with longtime rangers and interpreters. And so it was very, very difficult, as you might imagine, to narrow that down to just a couple or three or handful of stories that we wanted to feature in our film. We knew right away that we wanted to include a program in Chicago called Southside Blooms. Again, James had a connection with them. He'd done some filming for them in the past, and I was unaware of the program until he introduced it to me, but it is an absolutely incredible program that combines education and sustainability and economic revitalization in the South Side of Chicago, which is, you know, one of the most impoverished and disenfranchised communities in the country. So without going off on too much of a tangent, I'll just briefly explain what this program does. It's this couple, Hannah and Keelan Blackwell, were both very mission-driven, and they wanted to do something in the South Side. And they started looking around, and they discovered that there are all these vacant lots that nobody knows what to do with. Like, the city doesn't even want them. And there are lots where structures were torn down. And they realized that, hey, you could grow things in these vacant lots. And at first, they were thinking about growing food, but then they landed on growing flowers. And it turns out that the floral industry has mostly been offshored at this point. Most flowers sold in the United States are grown in other countries. And that wasn't always the case. And so they realized there's this tremendous opportunity to grow flowers on urban lots and empower and educate youth in the process and to create what they call an anchor industry for the community. At any rate, I'm sure we'll talk more about that program as we continue our conversation. But just to say that that was such a stunning example of a program that does combine all of these benefits. It may not look like traditional environmental education when you first see it.
Absolutely incredible. And it's just to find these nuggets, these golden nuggets, and to share these stories visually in such a documentary is such a, I think it's a gift to the world of environmental education and all of us. And you're a filmmaker. So was this new to you? Was this something that you were learning along the way and you just had this documentary lens?
I would say yes and no. So my background is actually, I'm a freelance writer and I have a natural history background. I studied ecology as an undergraduate, and I've always had just a really keen and abiding interest in conservation and restoration and, you know, all of the ologies.
Yeah.
And of course, I've been aware of environmental education for many years, have many friends involved in it, but not direct experience. And so I think what was newer to me was actually the whole world of documentary filmmaking. This was my second project with James, but it's not, definitely not my background or what I've done for my career, you know, these many years. But I think I can speak for both James and myself when I say that the breadth and scope and commitment of environmental educators was something that really blew us both away. And I think, you know, it's easy to miss what's really happening on the ground unless you're in a community. And so, like, I've been aware of some of the really cool programs in my own area, which is Southern Oregon. And there's some really great examples of hands-on, you know, holistic, formal and non-formal environmental education right in my backyard. There's a number of forest schools in the area, which is awesome. And Oregon actually is really supportive in that area. And then there's a lot of restoration programs that are seeking to be really holistic and incorporate art and culture and indigenous knowledge and, you know, all these other things, community building. So I think I was somewhat aware, but, you know, it's like anything. Once you start digging, you discover more and more and more, and you realize how much you don't know. And I think for James, maybe this whole world was in some ways a little bit newer, but he'd also been doing work with NAAEE for some years and had this connection with Southside Bloom. So I think we each brought our own assumptions and experiences to the table. And we, most of all, we were really just trying to have an open mind and be curious and try to find those examples that we thought, you know, both struck us and that would resonate with people and maybe even challenge people a little bit. So maybe this is a good time to talk about the two other main projects that we decided to feature in the film. One was a forest school. Well, it is a forest school. It's in Kentucky, based in central Kentucky, and it's called Red Oaks. And it was co-founded by a woman named Tina Brower and I think one or two other parents who at the time they had young children. And they realized that the conventional classroom just wasn't going to cut it for their kids. They had very high energy children who just really needed room to play and explore and get that energy out. So they started off really small and created a program. I think it was maybe even just once a month going to local natural areas. And over time, they developed curriculum, they attracted more families, and they eventually became a nonprofit. And today they have this incredible program that serves kids of all ages, from infants up to young adults and even families. And it's really just thrived. And they, because they're a nonprofit, they have a really interesting model where they don't have their own campus. Instead, mm-hmm. they really have to form relationships with other people in the community, other landowners, cities. So they hold their programming at parks and in one case on some private land in east central eastern Kentucky. It's really, really beautiful. And so I think that's, again, another of the themes we really wanted to explore was this idea of bridge building and community building. And I think Red Oaks really demonstrates that. And in that segment of the film, we have interviews with some of the parents talking about how they've gotten to know people they may not have otherwise come into contact with. And what they all have in common is they want what's best for their kids. And they've also discovered their own community through this Red Oak school experience. And so it's just a really compelling example of how there are things that transcend politics, despite evidence to the contrary right now. And yeah. I think, you know, when you focus on your own community, like that's where you can really find those connections. And there's just so many forces at play today that seek to take us away from those local connections, I think, and to see each other, you know, through these other lenses. And so this was just a great example that they have literal common ground under their feet.
Yeah, incredible. So again, you've answered this in many, many different ways in terms of what both you and James have learned along this journey. I mean, this is a true journey and witnessing all these programs. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to that?
Sure. Yeah, definitely. I think this will be a good time to talk about the third major story that we included. I was really interested, and James was too, in exploring the loneliness epidemic and the crisis of mental health that's really plaguing, especially younger people in our society today. And, you know, we were looking and thinking about the connection with nature and the capacity of nature and nature-based programs to connect people, not only with the natural world, but with each other and themselves So we really wanted to find a story that really highlighted and underscored that capacity. And so what we landed on is we were looking at the Children in Nature Network, which of course was inspired by Richard Louv's work. And I was kind of looking through, they give an annual award, and my apologies, I can't remember what the award is called, but basically it recognizes an outstanding leader or educator in the field. And so I think that the winner from 2024, maybe 2023, was named Jason Stout. And he's a longtime outdoor educator. He did a ton of work for Outward Bound. And his specialty was leading wilderness expeditions for youth who were dealing with grief because they'd lost a loved one. And he himself has experienced a lot of grief in his life. He's lost several family members when he was rather young. And so he's taken that experience and distilled it into these shorter sessions. And he leads them at these annual, I think they happen more than once a year, but these regional conferences for an organization called TAPS, which stands for the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. And these are military families, the kids of military families who have lost a loved one. It can be a parent, it can be a sibling, you know, it can be anyone who's close to them. These kids come together at these conferences and they're paired with a mentor who has also lost a loved one. And then they have just a weekend long, they have a weekend of programming to help them move through their grief and just connect with other people. And so as part of these conferences, Jason leads these healing in nature workshops. And we were really fascinated by that, for one, because it's maybe a way of connecting with nature that people aren't familiar with. And we were also really intrigued that he's holding these sessions in places that aren't necessarily wilderness. And in fact, where we filmed was at the San Antonio Riverwalk, which, while very beautiful, is not by any means like natural, pristine wilderness. And we really wanted to make the point that you can connect with nature anywhere. You don't have to go far away to have an experience. And I think in Jason's case, you know, he was dealing with pretty tight constraints. You know, he had these sessions of like 45 minutes to work with a new group of kids each time. And he developed a program on the Riverwalk that, you know, utilizing the water features and the plantings and just whatever nature happened to be around to make his point. And, you know, he would lead these circles where he would go through breathing exercises and just ways to help kids learn how to center themselves, ground themselves, and be more present. He talked quite a bit about phones and how they actually suck your energy away. And, you know, he was really trying to help these kids leave with very tangible, practical tools that they could use pretty much anywhere they went. And we got to speak with a number of the kids, and they were just incredible. They just had, you know, these incredible stories and were so brave and, you know, courageous to even talk to us. And it was clear that, you know, they were really getting a lot out of the whole weekend and connecting with the mentors and with the other kids and just being with people who understood what they were going through. And it was really fun also just to watch them being kids, like in some cases when they got out to the Riverwalk and they were just running around and, you know, playing in the water and doing things that kids do. So that was a really great experience. And I'm so glad that we discovered it and were able to include it in the film, because it's just, again, so very, very different from the other examples that we highlighted.
They're all very different. And it's just absolutely, it's like a quilt. I'm sort of thinking of a quilt, and all these different programs are, you know, the message is the same, but the way they're doing it may be different. Or, and I feel your documentary is such a gift to all of us, that you're sharing these incredible stories that wouldn't necessarily be shared otherwise. So it's, and just even that is such a unique way of connecting with nature in such a unique way. I absolutely love it. So can you tell us a little bit about your current Seed to Spark fundraising campaign?
Yeah, absolutely. So we started this campaign all along. We knew we wanted to make this film, but we didn't want the film to be an end of itself. We wanted it to be a means to greater impact. And so we had just enough funding to complete the film and to hold a couple of fantastic events, one in Chicago and one in Lexington, that where we screened the film and invited the organizations that were featured in the film to come and bring all their friends. These screenings were incredibly successful. I think we had over a total of 500 attendees, and these were also fundraisers for those organizations. So in Chicago, we raised money for Southside Blooms. In Lexington, we raised money for Red Oaks and for KAEE, which is the Kentucky chapter of the NAAE. And then we were out of money. So we needed more. And so what we really want to do now, and we have actually launched a national educator screening tour. And so the idea behind that is that educators can get a link to the film and host a screening and a Q&A, and they can lean on us for resources. And NAAE was generous enough to develop a really beautiful screening guide to accompany the film. And so it just helps people who want to do this work through all the questions they might have, just, you know, everything from practical considerations for the screening to developing questions for specific audiences. And so, you know, running this tour takes a little bit of admin work. So we need financial support for that. And so that's one of the things that we're raising money for. We would also like to host another in-person screening event in Washington, D.C., for the benefit of TAPS and NAAE. So we're really hoping to do that early next year sometime, possibly in February. But, you know, that's going to take a big chunk of cash. So we're raising money for that as well. And then thirdly, we would love to create a micro grant program where we help seed new projects in different communities. These projects would look very different from each other, you know, just depending on the need. But we can't do any of that without funding. So we have a Seed and Spark campaign, and we are trying to raise $32,500. And we are just about 50% of the way there. We have 22, well, as of this recording, we have 22 days left on our campaign. In order to receive any funding, we have to reach 80% of our goal. So that's about $25,600. So we're a little less than $10,000 away from meeting that goal. So we really hope we can get there, because it would just help us spread the impact of our film so much more. We've also submitted the film to several film festivals. And I think as of now, we've gotten into at least three of them. I went to Eugene, Oregon a couple of weeks ago and attended the Eugene Environmental Film Festival, where In Our Nature was screened. So that was really great. And it also made it to the Seattle Film Festival. And I'm sorry, I can't remember the third one right now, but we hope to submit to a few more festivals and see what happens there. But mostly we're just trying to get the film out there and share it with as many folks as we can. We will eventually make it available for community groups and basically anyone who wants to screen it. And then eventually we hope to find a streaming service that will support it. So that's our long-term goal.
I love that you answered all my educational questions that I was going to say in terms of, you know, really thinking about how the film can serve as a conversation starter for schools or, you know, teacher education programs, and creating these roles for storytelling and just incredible. I love that. You sat in a room and thought and brainstormed about it. This is not just a film. It's continuing this movement.
Yeah. And we were really struck by when we held, because we had Q&A sessions after the screenings in both Chicago and Lexington, and they were so interesting. We had participants in the programs participate in the panels, and then James and I were also up there And they were very different, as they should be, because the programs and audiences that the film is serving are very different. And so we're really excited about that and just about the potential to see these conversations. And also the screening events themselves, they brought a lot of different people together. I was really struck by that in Kentucky, where you had people from all these different organizations that were certainly related. And a lot of times the people knew each other or knew of each other, but they don't have that many opportunities to be in the same room together. And I think sometimes that's where the magic happens. You can start having a side conversation with somebody about, oh, I really want to do this project. And then another person says, oh, yeah, I know this other person who would really be interested in that. And then away it goes. So I think there's something really important, again, about getting people face-to-face, talking and sharing and, you know, asking each other questions and discovering and what potential there is. So, yeah, we'd love to support many more of those conversations, if possible.
Yeah. And you put a visual to it. You know, you've added the storytelling and then you've got this incredible visual and it's, and then you're building that community along the way. And it's just, yeah, it's a brilliant recipe for nature-based education and environmental education and building community and so on and so forth. So you and James have worked on another film together. Can you just tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. Several years ago, we were brought together by a mutual friend to work on a project exploring how renewable energy is helping communities in Eastern Oregon revitalize their economies. And it was a really great project to work on. I live in Oregon and I live in a rural community. So I think I brought that experience to the table. And then James, of course, has the filmmaking experience and just the natural curiosity and ability to connect with people. So we went on several production trips traveling throughout Eastern Oregon, which, if you don't know the state, is pretty big out there. And beautiful too. And we went to several communities and made connections and got permission to film, which was just such an interesting experience to basically cold call people and try to convince them to let us come in and film them. It just involves a lot of trust. With some people, we had people who could connect us and introduce us, but still it involved them trusting us to tell their story in a way that they were going to be okay with. And we both took that really seriously. And I think that the participants in the film could tell. So we forged really good connections with them. But we ended up going to several small towns in Eastern Oregon. There's one in particular called Lakeview. We spent a lot of time there and got really close to some of the people who live there. And they have a number of solar installations and have really used solar energy to, you know, create a lot of tax revenue for the county. And they also are doing some really innovative things around forest management. And they also have a geothermal resource and they just have a lot of super smart, interesting people who are into like discussing what they can do in this very remote rural place. So we ended up making a 30-minute documentary called Other Side of the Hill, and we had plans to screen it for the first time in Portland, Oregon, in March, I can't remember if it was March or April of 2020.
Oh.
And I think we all know what happened then. unfortunately, we were not able to host that event, and we kind of tabled the project for a little while. But then what we ended up doing is having a bunch of virtual screenings, and we connected, we hired an impact producer, which is actually another one of the reasons we need funding for In Our Nature is to pay an impact producer to help us with some of these tasks. But the impact producer helped connect with different organizations and helped set up screenings, dozens and dozens of them. Many of them were in Oregon, but many of them were elsewhere. And that was actually super successful and meaningful. We would sometimes serve on the Q&A panel. We recruited people from the film and had a lot of really great conversations. And eventually, Other Side of the Hill was screened on Oregon Public Television, and where it had a lot of impact there. And I believe you can still access the film there. And then it even inspired a new series on OPEB called Energy Horizons that looks at all of the different ways renewable energy is being used in Oregon. So we feel really proud of that project, and we're just really stoked by the impact it has had. And it was my first film project, and I have to say, I felt like a lot of times I was just along for the ride, and James is the true expert, but we had a great time, and it was super interesting. And one of the things that we really came away with that informed our work on In Our Nature was just the importance of getting out on the ground and talking with people. Again, I'm not sure how much you know about Oregon, but it's a fairly divided place as well. You have urban centers like Portland and Salem that are fairly liberal. And in general, when it comes to elections, Oregon votes blue. But that's really just because the urban centers have the population. You go out to the rural communities and it's very, very red. And there's a lot of animosity between those two groups, which is unfortunate. And what we learned by talking with people in Eastern Oregon is that they have very strong connections to the land, and they have a deeply instilled sense of stewardship, and they really take issue with any kind of characterization that makes them seem like they don't care about those things. And so one of the things we were looking at with Other Side of the Hill is the way people in these communities think about climate change. And it turns out, not surprisingly, that it's complicated, that in many cases, people acknowledge that the climate has been changing and that things are different than the way they used to be. They don't always necessarily attribute it to human activities, but sometimes they do. So again, it's just so important to not paint people with a broad brush, right, and to really listen to them and try to understand why they find certain phrases off-putting. We learned that language is really important, like how you talk about things is very important. That also was true in Our Nature. And one thing, I'm sorry to go off on a tangent, but I'm realizing that I was remiss in not mentioning one of the big factors that determined the direction of In Our Nature was we discovered a research paper called What is Political About a Tree? And it was written by a woman named Dr. Ellen Pruszynski, who teaches at Centre College in Kentucky. And she was motivated to do this research where she started looking at the political climate in Kentucky, which is also a very complex state politically and ecologically. You have a Democratic governor and a Republican legislature. And to realize this is probably a pretty challenging climate in some ways to be an environmental educator in. And she was curious how these educators navigate that. And so she started interviewing them. And through these interviews, she discovered, because Kentucky is also a state with a really vibrant environmental education culture, they have a really strong state-supported program, and it's just been really successful. And so what she discovered, among other things, is that these educators really strive to be apolitical, and they really strive to build bridges and not leave anyone out when it comes to delivering environmental education. And she was really intrigued by that and started wondering, well, what does it mean to be apolitical? Because you can hardly talk about any sort of issue affecting the natural world without quickly getting into politics. And so the more she talked with them, the more she realized that, one of the, and I think this is probably a universal principle and amongst environmental educators, is that, you're not telling them what to think. You're not avoiding talking about difficult or challenging issues, but you're not telling them how to think about them. You're giving them the tools so that they can use their abilities, their logic, their empathy, and their understanding of the natural world to come to their own conclusions. And that was really compelling to me. We really wanted to include Dr. Pruszynski in our film. And so we spoke with her. She's been extremely generous with her time. And it's part of what led us to Red Oaks Forest Tool in Kentucky. Mm. So we went to Kentucky and we filmed Ellen in her classroom, and we also interviewed her separately. And it was really great to see her working with her students as well, who were college age. So we have a little bit of that in the film too. And again, it just really ties with our past project, Other Side of the Hill, in recognizing the importance of language and respect, mutual respect, and just being aware of how you can easily alienate another or erode that fragile trust that's built.
Absolutely beautiful. The word that is coming to my mind is connections. It's sort of connections with nature, connections with community, connections with people. And just I'm unraveling that and putting that into stories is beautiful. If you were to leave a seed of inspiration for an educator or a parent or a leader in the community, what would that be as a final thought?
Gosh, that's a great question. I think I would leave people with something that I've been telling myself lately, which is to look around you and take inspiration from what's around you. You know, whether it's the natural world around you, the people around you, the community around you, there's a lot there. And it's so easy to get caught up in what's happening at the national level or even the global level. But I think keeping the ground under your feet in mind is very helpful as both a metaphor and a literal practice.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I would advise, is just to look around you and see where you can make impact, and don't try to do it by yourself.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. So we will have all the information regarding your documentary In Our Nature in the show notes, and all your information in the show notes. Is there anything else you would like to highlight before we sign off?
I would direct people to, we do have a website for In Our Nature, and it's inournaturemovie.com. So please feel free to visit. And if you are interested in hosting a screening, you can get in touch with us. Or even if you just have a question, we'd be happy to answer it.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Juliet, for sharing your story. Thank you so much for you and James putting this incredible documentary together. It's just been an absolute honor and pleasure to have you on today.
Well, thank you so much. We so appreciate the opportunity. It was lovely speaking with you. And, you know, I just want to give a shout out to all the environmental educators out there who are doing this important work in challenging times.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. If you're ready to take the next step and dive deeper into our communities, here's how you can get involved. First, you can join our one-hour workshops. These happen every month with fresh and exciting new topics each time. It's a great way to get a taste for what we offer. If you enjoy the workshops, you can become part of our Circle membership community. And this will give you access to not only all the new workshops that happen every month, but it will also give you access to our entire workshop library, which is growing. It will also give you access to our monthly roundtable discussions. And also, as a member, you receive exclusive discounts on all our programs. It's wonderful, wonderful family. The final step, if you would like to dig deeper into our community, is to join our Outdoor Classrooms Teacher Certification Program. This program is for those educators who are eager to dig even deeper into our programming, and it's the perfect next step. If you want to learn more about each of these programs, or you're not sure where you need to start, or any questions that you might have, schedule a one-on-one discovery call with me, Victoria Hackett. I will put all of that information in the show notes. You can also go to our website at www.outdoor-classrooms.com to learn more information. We can't wait to welcome you into our community. Until next time,